Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Thank you both for joining us. Hare Krishna. We're reading from the first canto of the Bhagavatam consecutively. We've completed chapter 2 yesterday. We're beginning chapter 3 today. The six questions of the sages that are found in chapter 1 are being answered in sequence. So the previous question that was answered, previous two questions, why does Krishna appear in this world, and the previous question is how does he act, what does he do to bring about creation from the spiritual plane to this temporal realm? And now the question is, what are the various features of those forms of the Lord as he appears in this world? So those are, notice, all three of those are, this is sambandh again. What's the relationship between Krishna and this created realm? But it's in divisions. Why, how, and what is that relationship? So he appears for the purpose of reclaiming or bringing those who are in the quality of goodness back to the spiritual world, and to induce or awaken the desire for coming to the position of goodness in those that aren't, and then taking them to the spiritual world. So it's a loving act, entirely. Otherwise, who would come here? Someone who has supreme independence, who would come here? And same one who is here as following Krishna's example, not imitating, but following his example, to be here and make the best use of it, is to assist in that mission. In practical ways, when we, if you read carefully in the purport of the last verse of the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, with the last verse of the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Who knows? Huh? Yoginam api sarvesham madgatein antaratmanam shradhavan bhajate yomam sandayukta tamo mataha. Krishna uses the word bhaj, bhajate. So Prabhupada explains, what is the meaning of this word bhaj? Because if that's it, that's the uttama form of yoga. And previously he said to Arjuna, by all means become a yogi, and this is the uttama form of yoga, bhaj. Bhajate yomam. What's that? So Prabhupada explains. Here's what it is. Bhaj, being the root word of bhakti, means, what does it mean? Who recalls what it means? Service. And it's specific. It's not like, think about it, service. It's practical. Specific. Practical means senses, encounter, sense objects, and do something. Practical. That's bunch. In a mood of worship. Yat Karoshi, Yat Asnasi, Yat Jehosi, Tadasi, Yat Tapasyasi Konteya. Tat Kurashva Madarpanam. Madarpanam. Worship. Work is worship, right? Not in that sense. Go to your job and that's my worship of God. Earn your money and that's worship of God. And spend your money and that's worship. So it's the mood. It's the Krishna consciousness behind making all things and offering to the Supreme. Madarpanam. When the senses meet sense objects. So there's another option. The option B is, or the most popular option, maybe we'll make it option A, but actually it's option Z, is enjoy. When one brings the sense objects in contact with the senses, that's called material happiness. The more things, more toys you have, the happier you're going to be. So work hard to get more toys so you can be happy. That's the program. Don't ask the question, do you need those things? Is that real happiness? Don't ask those things. Just listen to the propaganda that says you need those things to be happy. You must have those things to be happy. Otherwise, you're backwards, you're behind the Joneses or the Patels or the whatever. And you can't be happy. You just didn't make it because you didn't get those toys. Marketing. Anyway, there's a science to it. And it's all driven by the material energy. It's driven by the mode of passion, specifically. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam. It's the... it's miserable. So... Krishna's appearance in this world is to rescue living entities from that situation. And this chapter 3 is describing the forms of the Lord in which he appears for that purpose. This is the what and the why and the how in the Sambandha Gyan, the vision. And I'll preface this discussion by the state, but just reading, I'll read the statement that Prabhupada writes in his purport. To help you be extra attentive after the Sunday feast. Monday mornings are traditionally really challenging for speakers because fatigue. So this is the perk to stay wide awake. One who knows what is being described here, the Purusha avatars, one who knows these plenary features of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, knows Godhead properly, and thus the knower becomes freed from material conditions of birth, death, old age, and disease, as it is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. So, just by understanding this properly, we're out of here. Which means it's not just an academic affair, because knowing means service. Real knowing means you do it. And you not only do it begrudgingly or mechanically, but you do it fully knowingly, with your heart. This is, you know, the why question. Why should I? Like the gentleman that was asking his questions yesterday about why should I worship God or why should I acknowledge God. So when doing our devotional service, this adds the extra dimension of understanding why we're doing. So there'll be no faltering in our steps, or it'll help us overcome our material attachments and our aversions to Krishna and all the myriad of obstacles in the path of devotional service stemming from that one root cause, our attitude towards Krishna problem. Just, it helps to dissipate those obstacles from the root. We understand this is what reality is. As the reality that's accepted as illusion is, this is a setup for material enjoyment. And there are religions built upon that idea. God created this place. He's your father. He's a loving father. He gave you, you inherited all this stuff. He worked hard and created all this stuff, and he wants you to enjoy it. Get into it. That's my religion. And I'll go to the place of worship and say thank you. Sing some hymns and say thank you. Give a little something in the collection plate and sing some hymns and say thank you. And off I go and join. I could never figure it out. What's going on here? Prabhupada explained it all. When Dharma is driven by Artha, I want prosperity. You get your prosperity, who needs the Dharma anymore? Prabhupada explained, so many of our temples, Hare Krishna temples, are abandoned churches. Churches that people started with the purpose of worshiping God. What was driving that worship of God? Artha. You know, it's not in the liturgy. It's not Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. It's a whole other idea. It's worship God because you should worship God. But it was driven by, because it will bring prosperity. And when the prosperity came, see you later, God. Let's go to the golf course. Or whatever is someone's diversion of choice. Kama. And a little bit more of goodness as you stick to it, as you're doing the Dharma for more Artha, for more Kama. And then later on, you get serious about, you know, this other thing, Moksha. Anyway, so it's not cultural specific, it's material contact specific mentality. So this is to help, this understanding is to help us, draw us into another reality. The other reality is, here's what's really going on. And it's beyond, it's knowledge that's beyond the senses. So someone wants to confirm, how do I know it's true? That was the question yesterday. How do I know if I can't see? How can I know? If you can see, do you have the eyes to see? Can you know by seeing? That's, anyway, rather than going into that whole direction, this is knowing through the Vedic process of hearing. Pratyaksha, Anuman and Shabda. Shabda is best. This is the best way of knowing. And if one enters into this Shabda process properly, one can perfectly know, but that perfect knowing requires not only intellectual processing of information, which is the education system that we're all too familiar with, information processing education, but this is assimilating, bringing into the way that we see the world, paradigm is the word that's used these days, Shastra Chakshush, Jnana Chakshush, and then seeing in that way, at least conceptually, theoretically, then acting as best we can, not from the head, but from the heart, and then realizing. That was the last discussion I had with this fellow at the end. Mm. Try this process and see what you experience. But try the process not from your head, but from your heart. See what happens. So this knowledge, I had plenty of experience as a newer devotee looking at this understanding and just basically trying to figure it out, what's being said. And only after some time did it become not just figure it out, but this is the way it is. And it's what we can't see with our eyes, but it's the way it is. Just like you can't see the soul. Not only can't see the soul, lots of things you can't see. You can't see the mind, you can't see the intelligence, can't see false ego, but for sure there's false ego. For sure there's a mind. Sometimes there's some intelligence. You can't see the soul. You can't see the Purusha avatars unless you qualify yourself with, this is this Rishabdev section of the Bhagavatam that we're discussing, we'll continue discussing this afternoon. It's the when real qualities, like, you know, things that you used to think about when you were a teenager, the really real idealism, it's got to be like this kind of things. And if it's not, you're frustrated. Only leaving aside the frustration, aspiring for the really real things, real qualities. Lord Vishnu showed himself out of the sacrificial fire. He who was accepting the grains and the ghee and the offerings of the brahmanas and hearing the mantras and represented by the fire, he showed his form, saying, I'm very pleased by your qualities. So if we want to see, we can express this to our friend, if you want to see God, here's what the scripture says, get some real qualities. Real ones. Not the cosmetic ones, not the distorted ones and disturbed ones and mixed ones. Real qualities. This knowledge is not just information, it's invested with such spiritual potencies that if heard properly, those qualities, we read it just yesterday, they awaken the desire, the potencies awaken the desire to reach Krishna. Now, when you listen carefully to this, when the real desire to reach Krishna is there, then is when the desire to have the real qualities that will please Krishna. I don't want to come before Krishna dirty. I want to come before Krishna clean and pure. I want to come before Krishna where Krishna will smile rather than where this creature comes from. Take him away until he becomes clean. Clean, pure. I want to come before Krishna in a pure state. I want to please Krishna by being in his presence. Then the desire for those qualities will be really rocket fueled. Because the other is, I want. For myself. I want to enjoy and I don't want to suffer. Or I want to be appreciated and I don't want to be not appreciated. And so on. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavatya kinchana sair vair ganais tatra samasatesara. Nice verse. Krishna decorates his sincere devotee with those qualities. We can't. What marketplace do you go to get qualities? Where do you go? Krishna! And when he sees the sincere desire, not just I want desire, but to please you. And how do we know how to please Krishna? What is pleasing to Krishna? Through the representatives of Krishna. So I want to please the representatives of Krishna. I really, really, this idealism spirit, I want what's really real to please Krishna and please his representatives. Not a show, the really real thing. Anyway, so this Bhagavatam is one of those incarnations of the Lord, the literary incarnation of the Lord, specifically for this age, to awaken those desires. So, chapter 3 begins with Shukadev Goswami, Vyasadev, describing the Purusha avatars, because they're the first of the expansions of the Lord to appear in this world before there's even the world. There's just ingredients, and even those ingredients are undifferentiated and in a subtle state. The pradhan. So, within one corner of the universe, Prabhupada uses that phrase, Mahavishnu lies down. He's expanded, he lies down in one corner of the universe, and he creates the causal ocean as an expansion of his infinite potency. Here's how Vyasadeva writes it. Sutta said, in the beginning of the creation, the Lord first expanded himself in the universal form of the Purusha incarnation and manifested the ingredients for the material creation. And thus, at first, there was the creation of the 16 principles of material action. This was for the purpose of creating the material universe. Now, Prabhupada very wonderfully, in the purport, makes the connect between Bhagavad Gita and this Srimad Bhagavatam discussion. Like ABC and then graduate study. So the ABC is, the Bhagavad Gita states that the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna maintains these universes by extending his plenary expansions. So this Purusha form is the confirmation of the same principle. So there's the Bhagavad Gita connect, at least in one part. The maintaining principle, creating, maintaining, and annihilating, these three. Vishnu is the maintainer. And Krishna, by his plenary expansions, maintains the universe. But we're not even yet at the existing part. So he creates the universes by Mahavishnu. And then the sub-creation part is by Brahma, who is the creation of Garbhadakshay Vishnu. So although Brahma gets the credit, Garbhadakshay Vishnu is the one who really does it. It's by his potencies, and thus he's the remote cause. But everybody, well, at least on the higher realms, Brahma's the creator. And then those that don't know so much about Brahma, they think the Big Bang is the creator or something. The void is the creator. From nothing came all this. Then Prabhupada explains that according to scripture, Vasudev, well known as the son of Vasudev, Sri Krishna, the son of Vasudev and Devaki, he is Bhagavan. He is the possessor of all opulences in full. So when we're speaking of he expanded, it's back to the previous chapter, Vasudev. Vasudev, Vasudev, Vasudev. Vasudev expanded. And since Vasudev is the Bhagavan, the possessor of all opulences in full, parts of his opulences are manifested as Vishnu, as the Paramatma. So, Mahavishnu is, in one sense, not Paramatma. Mahavishnu is, in another sense, Paramatma. Because Paramatma is nothing but an expansion of Garbhadakshay Vishnu, is an expansion of Mahavishnu. And so, those three Purusha avatars, it's one. Purusha avatars. It's expansions of Vishnu for the purpose of, we discussed this. Although the names are three, the entity is one, and the names and the particular manifestations are according to function for the purpose of creation. One function, expand the universes. Another function, enter within each universe and produce Lord Brahma so he can do the sub-creation. And the third is expand within every atom so that the maintenance program is really, really efficient. It's a good setup. But it's one entity, Vishnu, variously manifested, so that the whole program goes on. The purpose of creation is fulfilled. Expanding of, maintaining, and withdrawing of those universes with different empowered personalities to do those things. So this is the emphasis here so far, is that this is a portion of the opulences. Now there's different ways that opulence, the term opulences, can be used, just like in Bhagavad Gita. The opulences are vibhutis, actually the opulences of the Absolute. That's how we have it in our Bhagavad Gita as it is. In Sanskrit, it's vibhuti yoga. And towards the end of this chapter 3, There's a distinction between bhaga and vibhuti. Bhaga is what Bhagavan manifests in the spiritual world. He manifests his infinite divine, fully spiritual opulences. And vibhutis has a different connotation. It's reflections of those opulences of the spiritual world in this material world. It's the excellences of this reflected energy. It's just a reflection, just as Krishna concludes that chapter. He said, but a spark of my splendor. And the splendor is bhaga, and the spark is the vibhuti. And the splendor is just splendor. It's what is the splendor us? From whom the splendor comes. And the vibhutis are a reflection, or but a spark of, that splendor. So, that's the vibhutis of chapter 14, Bhagavad Gita. But here it's the Bhagavan. Now what's the relationship between Bhagavan, Paramatma, and Bhagavan? These are but parts of the opulences of Bhagavan. So when we're speaking of Vishnu, this beginning part of chapter 3, the Purusha avatars, just bear in mind, it's but a part of the opulences of Bhagavan. It's not a part in the same way that the living entity is a part. That's different. That's an angsa. These are vibhu. And there's anu and there's vibhu. This is vibhu. It's a plenary expansion. But even the plenary expansion is but a part of the opulences. Paramatma is a subset of Bhagavan, for those of you that like mathematics. It's included. When we speak of Bhagavan, you can think, oh, that includes. And when you speak of Paramatma, when you speak of Purusha avatars, conversely, oh, that's a part of Bhagavan. So we can say, Krishna is in the heart of every living being. And it's true. An expansion of Krishna is in the heart of every living being. We don't have to get technical every time we say it. A cleaner expansion of Krishna is in the heart of every living being. You just say Krishna is in the heart of every living being. And the one and the same, yet different, as the expansion. So this is the Purusha avatars that are expansions. Then another Bhagavad Gita connect, Prabhupada presents in the purport, how this topic connects with the message of Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita, it is also mentioned that the material world is created at certain intervals and then again destroyed. Mentioned like that in Bhagavad Gita. Bhutva bhutva praliyate. Krishna says that's what happens. So, why? We mentioned this already over the weekend, but I'll just emphasize it again. One of the richnesses, one of the opulences, one of the treasures of Krishna consciousness, or the presentation of Vedic wisdom that Prabhupada has provided to the world, is answers to why questions are abundant. Especially people that are in all these fields of technology. What questions, but also why questions? It's just we're trained to probe those things, ask those things. If you don't, you don't go very far. Why? What and how? So, here's the why. Why the bhutva bhutva praliyate? Why creation? And there's many variations on the theme. Why does God create this place where there's suffering if He's all good? Especially when someone's suffering. They don't ask the question otherwise. I mean, something really severe. Why? Well, it's either wise or suffering, or then they just like directly pin it on God. Why did he do this? Some calamity, major catastrophe. Why? Why the creation? Go back. Why the creation? So, very nicely, Prabhupada explains, Krishna is the only enjoyer. He's the Purusha, and there's Prakriti, just like really fundamental stuff. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7. There's two categories of Prakriti. Bina, Prakriti Ashtada, that's the eight separated material ingredients, and there's Para Prakriti, that's the living entity. And the material world is made up of these two Prakritis, and there's one Purusha. Real simple. It gets complicated, though, when the Para Prakriti thinks I'm Purusha. It's called false ego. I want to enjoy Prakriti. There's one of the reasons for material creation. Krishna doesn't say no. He says, it's not a good idea. I want to enjoy. My dear living entity, are you sure? I want to enjoy, I want to enjoy! All right. Here's this place where you can try to be the enjoyer in Prakriti, but I'm warning you, it's got a big label on it, buyer beware. Just like the cigarette package, you take this product, it's going to kill you. I want to enjoy. All right. You can't, but you can try. And as you're trying, there's going to be a lot of suffering. It's okay. I want to enjoy. Stubborn obstinacy, Prabhupada calls it. Have you noticed in the description of the demoniac personalities that challenge Krishna, like Jarasandha, they choose to not get it? 21 times. Completely annihilated. Just by Krishna's mercy, he spared Jarasandha. He went wimping back each time. Ooh, defeat it again. And build another army and try to defeat Krishna again. And again. And tirelessly, the enjoying spirit gets smashed and keeps trying and trying. I want to enjoy. So that's one of the purposes of creation. Providing the misuse of free will to have its exercise. I want to enjoy spirit. Go ahead and try. And the other part is, let's see if we can remedy that enjoying spirit. The house of correction, they call prison houses. One is just restrain these people from hurting others, but the other is maybe they can be corrected. A correctional institution. Give it a nice name. But that's the purpose. This material world is a correctional institution where we're given the opportunity to get it instead of choosing to not get it. And Prabhupada writes it just like that. Those fortunate living entities who catch the truth and surrender. What's the truth? There's one enjoyer, and it ain't us. It's Vishnu, it's Krishna, the unseen enjoyer. He's unseen because we don't want to. We don't have the qualification. We don't want to. According to Bhagavad Gita, when the glorification of Krishna is heard, the demons flee here and there. They don't want to. Stop your racket. Get out of here. Don't push your religion and all those things. Some demons have that response, and the devotees become very joyful. So, our mission, our challenge, is to catch the truth. Catch the truth is not just, repeat it, not just intellectually. With the mind, say yes, and with our actions, stay stuck. Or from the heart, say stuck. From the heart. Catch the truth and move with it and surrender unto the lotus feet of Vasudeva. After many, many births in the material world, join the eternally liberated souls. Enter into the kingdom of Godhead. Victorious position requires to catch the truth and surrender. When there is knowledge, there's proof. Surrender and service. Bhajate. Practical demonstration. So it may take some practice and more practice and a lot of practice. Really sincere practice. Krishna, please help me! Kind of sincere practice, and Krishna bestows that. Shifting of the material energy to usher in the spiritual energy and take us to Him. So this Bhagavatam is, once again, it's Krishna's arrangement after His departure to bring Dharma, this means Sanatan Dharma, real, eternal spiritual principle into this world once again. It's what Prabhupada brought with him to deliver the Western countries, the English-speaking parts of the world. Here we are. The message of Lord Chaitanya, the message of pure devotion to Krishna. Catch the truth and surrender unto Krishna. Not just during Bhagavatam class, but throughout our day, throughout our life. Live with this, bring those messages within your heart and carry them. Shrinvanti Gayanti Grinanti Sadhavaha. But those who cannot catch the constitutional truth, well, they are again merged into the Mahatattva at the time of annihilation. And again, when Mahatattva is let loose, those conditioned souls are again set forth in busy activity, working hard for sense gratification, which they can never get. So that's the purpose of the bhutva bhutva praliyate. Because some choose to say no. So it goes on. Now a little bit about these 16, how does Prabhupada translate it? 16 principles of material action. What are those 16 principles of material action? Well, real easy, there's the five material ingredients, Panchabhuta. And then there's Have some water. There's 11, Prabhupada writes, working instruments or senses. What are those 11 working instruments or senses? 5 knowledge acquiring senses, 5 working senses in the mind. Knowledge acquiring senses. So you know these. Knowledge acquiring senses and working senses. So that which you use to do work with, when you have processed, okay, this is the service I need to do, you have working senses. The body is, the maintenance of the body is set up also through the evacuating senses or openings in the body. And the mind, our dear friend, our best friend, or worst enemy, the mind. So those are the 16. Now, what happened to the 24? So these 16, they're principle. Besides those 16, what are the other ones to make up the 24? The next obvious one is, in addition to the knowledge acquiring senses, 5 objects of those senses. We're up to 21. There's only 3 left. Then another 2, the features of the subtle body. We got to have a mind. And sometimes we have some intelligence, and false ego is always there. The other 2 components of the subtle body, intelligence and false ego. So there's 1 thing left to make 24. What's that 24th element? Huh? So that's not the Mahatattva. That's, the soul is fully spiritual. What's the other one? And in Sanskrit it's Chaita. And if you look carefully in the 3rd canto, Kapila Dev's Fundamental Principles of Material Nature, you'll find 2 different translations. One is contaminated consciousness. Of course we've got to have contaminated consciousness in order to be here, hang out, work out. Another translation of that term or explanation of that term is the conglomerate, like, you know, the warehouse, where all those other 23 things are stored, the balance of them. There's a big supply in the warehouse. I don't know the connection between contaminated consciousness and those 20, the conglomerate. But those 2 translations are given. So there's 24 elements, and that's the material stuff. Can I have a Bhagavad Gita? Top shelf. In the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita is a Sankhya section. What we just, the 24 elements, analyzing matter and spirit according to the components, differentiating. Sankhya means to count, to analyze the 24 elements and apart from them the soul, or differentiate spirit from matter. Like a preliminary of that is in the early parts of the 2nd chapter. Here's spirit, here's matter. That's Sankhya. And more elaborately, So in the seventh chapter, here's 8, and then again 24. They're just different systems of Sankhya. Here it's 16. So it's not that they're not right, this one's right and that one's wrong, just different systems and more elaborate way of dealing with it. In the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna indicates something that's apart from the soul or not on the spiritual platform, not acting from the soul, as some of you have been accustomed to hearing, acting from the soul, and different from that are so the 24 elements, which this is verses 6 and 7 from chapter 13, Bhagavad Gita. The five great elements, this is the 24, false ego intelligence, the unmanifested, pradhan, or avyakta, 10 senses, and the mind, 11, 5 sense objects. Okay, so there's the 24. And then there's the mixing of those 24. Put it in a blender, turn it on high speed, and you come out with desire, hatred, happiness, distress. The aggregate, this is this 24th element. Life symptoms. Life symptoms are driven by the soul, but the symptoms are manifested through matter. And convictions. You know, like I have faith in making a lot of money. I have faith that if I can step on this guy's head, I'll get higher in the corporate ladder and I'm going to do it. Or I conviction I shouldn't do that. Material convictions that are not in not connected to God, just, you know, convictions. Conceptions of life that are carried within the mind, as the air carries aroma. The air is material and the aroma is material. The conceptions in the mind, as well as the mind, they're material. These are all considered, in summary, to be the field of activities and its interactions. So like psychology and, you know, the feelings within the mind and relating to the feelings and the, you know, getting in touch with your feelings as they... It's material. And then, because the question is, what is kshetra and what is kshetragya? That's kshetra. And then there's the soul. It was kshetragya. So one of the, what's the value in this? It's called detachment. It just doesn't mean it's I don't care. But detachment means I don't identify with those things. That ain't me. That's not me. It's there, and then to observe, some of you are being trained like this, you observe, you hear this phrase, stay with those emotions, you observe those transformations, permutations and combinations, using Prabhupada's language. But you're over here. You're the observer of those things. And it's not you. It's something that's happening. It's the reactive and interactive forces of the material energy that may be impelled by or triggered by something that's over here and something that's over there, and then all of a sudden, boom, just like looking in the sky and it's a clear sky, and then how clouds in the sky can form and then dissipate, and some of them become rain clouds and down, but then some of them just, they start to form and then they just, it's fascinating. But then you're the observer over here. It's just forces of nature at work. And we're subjected to those laws of nature as long as we identify, that's me. And you withdraw that identification, that's me, from the forces of material nature, and you're situated in a neutral state, in a transcendental state, at least neutral state. What to speak of then investing consciousness in the Supreme, who is the controller of those material forces and gives you the ability to be detached from those material forces. Let me invest my consciousness in Krishna. That's Krishna consciousness. Real practical. Let me turn my attention to Krishna instead of identifying with all that stuff that's happening out there. Just like this Bhakti Tirtha Swami passing. He knew very well what was going on with his body. I mean, it was a very powerful experience just visiting him, he had his shirt, his kurta open, and he had his hand under his kurta and was moving his hand like this. But his hand was bulging, and it took some time before I could understand. I mean, he explained. He said he just gave an inventory of what's going on in his body, and what was going on up here was there was a huge tumor. Now, any of you that have had a boil, you know what it feels like. Painful, right? Really painful. That was a tumor. The hand was bulging like a baseball. And it was pressing on his collarbone. In fact, it half broken his collarbone. And that's just in that part of his body. See, he was aware of the pain, but he was transcending the pain, not by painkillers. Then he was describing, you know, where there are other tumors in his body with his amputated leg. And, you know, just like from head to toe was describing what was going on. He was aware of what was going on, but he was not identifying with it. Withdrawing consciousness from the 24 elements and its interactions. So there's the physical and there's the mental, mind, platform. And there's the soul platform, because there's the intellectual platform. The intelligence can direct the mind away from misidentifying with the cloud and the sky and the formations and coming and the going of the clouds and the sky. Like Prabhupada describes, this is a little lesson in psychology, but you can look at the cloud in the sky and there's no cloud, and then there's a cloud. And you look at the cloud and it looks like a pussycat and you're nice. And then the pussycat turns into a dragon. And you're afraid. And then the cloud disappears. And then you feel relaxed. What's that? It's illusion. It's not anything. Not a pussycat, not a dragon. It's nothing to be joyed by or feared by or in fear of. Just cloud in the sky, and you're the observer over here. And while you're absorbed in the cloud in the sky, where's Krishna? You can appreciate the... Oh, what a wonderful artist Krishna is. Just see. That's Krishna consciousness. It's detachment through knowledge, but not just when you have knowledge, don't just like process it. Be there. Like serve Krishna from that position of what a wonderful, supreme, loving person Krishna is. He's provided this house of detention and the house of correction at the same time. And let me not be afraid of the detention part. Let me get into the correction mode. Let me catch the truth and surrender to Krishna. like Prabhupada describes. The person who is the criminal, when he sees the policeman, he's afraid. I hope he doesn't catch me. And the good citizen feels safe and protected when he sees the policeman. For a while, the city, Devamrita Swami's father is a captain in the police force of the city of New York. He's whatever they call him, he's a lifer. It's his career. And during the mayorship of, what was his name? There was a good mayor for a while. Huh? Yeah, Giuliani. Thank you. They had a very interesting system. I'll come back to the Bhagavatam in just a second. They had a very interesting system of persons were given position of being, whatever they call it, in charge of a precinct, not by how many crimes they caught, but how much they brought the incidence of crime down. So we were in a neighborhood that was considered like a high crime area. So they put a precinct in, right like one block, half a block away, the next corner over. And the previous cops were really like arrogant. I won't repeat some of the things that they said, but these other Giuliani's police, they would come to the temple and you know, get to know who's there, and you know, their purpose was to be present to find out where there's problems and if they have resources to help solve problems. Like this, you want to report something, we want to get on that something, because my job as the captain of this precinct is to make sure crime incidences come down. So when we saw the police on the street, it was, hey, this is great. And crime went way down. It went down so well that they moved the precinct to another problem place. That was not good. We wanted them to stay. So when the devotee sees the agent of the material energy, the devotee's happy. Because this is an opportunity to serve Krishna. When the senses come in contact with the object of the sense, it's for the service of Krishna. Here comes some opulence. It's not, enjoyment. At last, I'm getting the reward for all of my austerities and sacrifices, and now I can enjoy. No. An opportunity to serve Krishna. It's a different energy. Internal energy is it provides real protection. One feels safe in the internal energy of Krishna. One feels loved by Krishna, the relationship with Krishna, by that internal energy of Krishna. We have to qualify ourselves for that. Although Krishna is offering it, we're in this attitude towards Krishna business. He's very loving. Although he's unseen, his energy indicates his presence. And he has diverse energies according to how we regard him, he deploys them. So just, I want to go on to the next verse because it wraps it up very nicely. Text 2. A part of the Purusha. A part of, so there's the Purusha, there's the portion of a plenary portion, or there's a plenary portion and there's a portion of the plenary portion. This is Prabhupada's language. So the plenary portion in general means Vishnu Tattva. And a portion of the plenary portion are the different, the Garbha Dakshai Vishnu portion of the plenary portion. a part of the Purusha, lies down within the water of the universe. So we've advanced very quickly from the spiritual world. Mahavishnu lies down in a corner of the spiritual sky, and then universes generate from his body, along with the ingredients that expand those universes. Then he enters within each universe, text 2. Within the water of the universe, from the navel lake of his body sprouts a lotus stem. That's pretty cool, huh? Anybody can do that? As Agni Vesh was saying, Bhakti Tirtha Swami is really cool. The portion of the plenary portion is really cool. He sprouts a lotus from his navel. And from the lotus flower atop the stem, Brahma, the master of all engineers of the universe, becomes manifest. That's cool. And that's not all. Within the stem, all the planets within the universe manifest. So, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu lies in half of the water which comes from the perspiration from his own body. That's cool too. Then he generates a lotus on top of the lotus, so and the other half of the universe has at its top Brahma, and then within the stem of that lotus, I've never seen that stem, but I've never seen Brahma either, as all the universe, all the planets of the universe. So the upper, so there's the Bhuvar and Svargalokas of the upper planetary systems. There's three of them. And then Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, another three, and then Brahmaloka. So Bhuloka, that's our place. This middle planetary region, because there's seven lower planetary regions. It's in that stem. It's in this area where Lord Brahma's planet, or Lord Brahma's abode, the lotus that sprouts from this stem, from the navel of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, appears. Now even Brahma, who climbed down and down and down and down and down and down down that stem, and he couldn't find Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. You think we're going to find Garbhadakshaya Vishnu by Pratyaksha? No way. Fellow, I'll believe what I see. Well, even if you were a Brahma, you couldn't see. Not that way. How can you see? Tapo Divyam, from Rishabhdev's teaching, or Tapa, divine austerities. Are you ready? Divine austerities? You want to qualify yourself to see? And I want to stamp my foot and say, I want to see. I'll believe in God if He shows me. You're not qualified. You have to qualify yourself. Just a little bit from this purport and we'll end because it's getting late. Prabhupada writes, the Mahavishnu lies down in some part of the spiritual sky by his own free will. What's the cause? No cause. Causeless. It's free will. There's a function, but he does not obliged to do anything. He's performing a function out of his own sweet will. Thus he lies down on the ocean of Karana, from where he glances over his material nature and Mahatattva is at once created. So he glances over pradhan, which is the undifferentiated totality of material energy. It's all there, but it's not, it's just like mixed up. It's not even mixed up and tangled like, you know, spool of thread or something. It's just it's undifferentiated. And by his glance, it differentiates. Or the way that Prabhupada writes it, it's very nice. Thus, electrified by the power of the Lord, it's an implied metaphor. The metaphor is like electricity runs through the copper wire and brings properties to the copper wire that are not manifest minus the electricity. So in other words, it's not that copper wires do what this amplifier is doing just because it's a copper wire. It requires electricity, which then electrifies the copper wire so it can drive the microphone and amplifier and speaker. Otherwise, it's inert matter. It just sits there in a box somewhere and doesn't amplify. But when electrified, it does different actions. Similarly, material nature doesn't create, it doesn't even differentiate, what to speak of, assemble itself in different ways. It's just inert matter. It appears, so the squirrel appears to be alive because of the electrification, the spiritual energy that's invested within the matter as the soul and super soul. That's life. Or this is the life comes from life basis. This is the life, and then there's the, I mean, this is the life, and then life comes from life. How? Here's the how. Mahavishnu's glance, really powerful. He electrifies with his own potency. The living entities come, and not only the living entities, the karma, which is also subtle and stored by really neat arrangement, real cool arrangement of Mahavishnu, or the Purusha avatars. He oversees the storing of and the release. What's the agent that brings the release of karma? It's time. Really great technology. Of course, it's his own energies, and he's the best. But the time energy is essential. You don't have karma without time. You don't have karma without living entities. You don't have karma without prakriti. You know, the other, those five factors of Bhagavad Gita. But you don't have, you can have the other four without time, you won't have. To have activity, you have to have time. Like, you know, to get up when class is over and go to your next thing. You can't do that without time. Where's the time? I don't see it. It's passing. It's acting. It's an energy of Krishna. It's one of the electrifying energies of Krishna, along with the soul, along with the force of karma and the inanimate prakriti. And then there's Ishwara, those five. But the electrifying is this time I am, destroyer of all things. But time also brings things into being as well as destroys all things. Things don't come into being without time. It's an energy through which Krishna acts. It's the electrifying energy. And the soul is being carried. Yantra. Rudhani Maya. Being carried by that machine of the material energy. So thus, electrified by the power of the Lord, the material nature at once creates innumerable universes. Just as a tree in due course decorates itself with innumerable, of course there's finite number, of grown fruits. Nice metaphor. There's the seed. Plant the seed. That's what Prabhupada gives. The seed of the tree is sown by the cultivator. And the tree, or creeper, in due course becomes manifested with so many fruits. So what's the seed? Krishna gives the seed. He gives the seed as the soul. He gives the seed as the ingredients that are now differentiated, and the time energy. And it, as time passes, universes, like fruits on a tree, bhavati, they become manifest. And so mystic yogis, they can also, by that same mystic process, bhavati, they can create a universe, or create a planet, rather. So they can't, apart from Krishna's, it's just a manipulation of Krishna's energies and given a certain capacity, not only knowledge, but capacity to do that. Voila. But where does that ability come from? Comes from the original creator. Where does mother and father get the ability to produce a child? From the original child producer. He not only provides the seed, but he provides the ingredients, and he provides the laws, and he provides the whole system. So anything that anyone else does is just a repeat of the original creator. By natural or artificial means. If one wants to give credit to the scientist by artificially doing something, well, let's not give a little credit to the person who they're trying to copy. He's got the patent, and they're trying to violate the patent. Reproduce the thing another way. Material nature has no power to create without the power of the Purusha. So Prabhupada is using this metaphor of electricity power. Again, just like some appliance or a device, our air conditioning unit that's rumbling over here. It doesn't rumble without electricity. The amplification system, it doesn't amplify, the light doesn't shine. So much of electronics we're using in our world today. Decent to roll up your window. You can't do it by hand. You got to do it with electricity. The thing breaks down. You can't roll up your window. You can't roll it down. It needs electricity. And, you know, little devices that receive that electricity. So that's what life is. It's a device, a machine that receives the electricity. It receives the spiritual potency of the Supreme Lord. That's what drives the whole thing. So the process of bhakti yoga is to connect with the internal potency. It is a manifestation of the internal potency, which can connect us with the powerhouse. More than the powerhouse, the powerful Supreme Person. It gives us a relationship with that Supreme Person and will enable us to not just take what we're hearing today as another bunch of information that we're supposed to process so we can get A on exams, but it's to give us an understanding of this is what's really going on. This is how this place works. What a wonderful Supreme Person Krishna is. That's how we're supposed to take this knowledge, is to inspire us with proper understanding to appreciate Krishna and not be bewildered by speculations of people who are atheistic and don't have a clue and they choose to not get a clue. They choose to not catch the truth. They choose to not get it. So we want the association of those who want to catch the truth. In fact, are working on the surrender and application of that truth. That's the Sangha that we want. And we want to be very carefully distance ourselves from the other unwholesome association. This is Vaishnava. And we want to make those relationships with Vaishnavas genuine. Not cosmetically, genuinely. Progressively in the course of our lives. To come before Krishna means to be in that consciousness where the Sangha of those who are sincere in trying to approach Krishna, we can make our respectful connection with those individuals. No small thing. Okay, so any discussion? Bhagavatam is nice, huh? Gaura Shakti. Speak a little louder. The rumbling is a little louder than you. We consider? Consider?
When we consider.
So the messias brings us to the material world, and to really connect again with the free will, one has the bodily conception of life prevents us to connect properly with the free will. And so it seems like you have to go through an empathy process to fully connect with it.
Yeah.
So do we understand this to be more of a punishment or a
purification? No. Yeah. Purification's nice. It's not a punishment. If you have a loving relationship with a loving parent, no, dear Prahlad
has loving parents. So if the parents restrict Prahlad, he can see it as punishment. Or you can see it as a loving gesture. And Ardha Nivritti is,
it's ecstatic. It's just like we were discussing, you know, Tapo Divyam. It's not that Nirjala Ekadasi is painful. Nirjala Ekadasi is ecstatic. There's the inconvenience. You can feel, you know, body is getting dehydrated or whatever it is, becoming weakened through the austerity of fasting. But if the consciousness goes above that, it's purification. I'm not going to just cave in to the dictates of the senses.
Hygienically, it's good. Ayurveda, it specifically, it doesn't say...
It depends on which Ayurveda school, but... Just for cleansing of the body, fasting every 2-week period is recommended for good health. So, I want good health. Krishna, I don't know, but I want good health. So, fasting. So, when you're improving your health, for improving health purposes, what do people do these days? Yay, yay, yay. But, you know, it's nice. All these people that are out running around, doing their whatever they do, things, spending so much money at health clubs, and, you know, so they can be slim and trim and healthy. Big industry. When they're, you know, doing their stuff, is it painful? They're thinking, this is great. Because they see the higher purpose. So the Anartha Nivritti process is ecstatic. one can see it as painful, or one can see it as ecstatic. That was part of the topic yesterday. If something comes into your life that teaches it, the instrument of Krishna is to teach you. It's Krishna's arrangement, Krishna's loving arrangement to teach you. Don't be proud, just as I was giving my own example. It was pride. The problem was pride. I'm something special. It's pride. Something special. Ha. Huh. Become humble. Rawr, rawr, rawr. Humble. You become humble. Become humble. Just serve Krishna. Well, you just serve Krishna. Pride. With pride, you can't see. You can't see Krishna. You can't see the instrument of Krishna properly either. But Krishna wants that, because Krishna doesn't like pride in the heart of his devotees. Krishna doesn't like pride in the heart of the gopis, what to speak of us. And he does things to help relieve us of that pride. That's nice. Krishna's helping us come before him clean, pure. That's nice. The anarta-nivritti process is nice. Divine austerities is nice. Becoming humble is nice. Becoming free from pride is nice. Bearing pride and false ego, what a burden. Yuck. Plenty of that. Plenty. It's not nice. Getting free from it is nice. It seems painful because we're attached. I don't want to get rid of this pride. It's me. The pain is our attachment. The indication from Krishna to Uddhava in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam is that's where suffering is. It's in the mind, our attachment to conceptions of ourselves in some erroneous way. I am the enjoyer in this way. Attachment. Krishna says, I'm sorry, but it doesn't work in the kingdom of God. You gotta let go of this. Nice. Anarta-vritti is nice. It's Krishna's kindness. Krishna's kindness is always nice. Always. But if we want to surrender to Krishna on our terms, we suffer. Until we choose to catch the truth. Krishna is the enjoyer. We're meant to, our existence, our existential reality is to bring pleasure to Krishna. That's nice. That's the supreme nice. On Krishna's terms, you bet. So it's easy to, process that intellectually, and then reality of life comes and we're attached to our conception of what enjoying in Krishna consciousness and serving Krishna is all about, until we just, gradually get purified. And that's nice. Anarta-nivritti is nice. I'm convinced. More? Okay. Anything else? Yes. I can hear. I'm just getting a little assistance.
You're talking about the different interactions of the material elements.
Different interactions of material elements.
Our convictions.
Desire and hate.
So,
We're on that platform, in that arena of stuff.
So, on the strength of hearing from saintly persons, I get some inspiration. I say, I choose to serve Krishna. But
Jai!
But it seems even that is on the mental platform that you're saying in my
mind. It's just because we're creatures of habit. That's all. Don't become discouraged by that. It's just, we're creatures of habit. The real value is that you continue with that process of hearing and taking inspiration. You're forming another habit. And gradually displacing the other habit. Just, again, it's, we're creatures of habit. We're habituated. So if we're inattentive, the default mode comes. Right? Just like computer lingo. You don't set up a certain, it just goes into default mode. And the default mode is the prior habit. The prior habit is identifying with the interactions and permutations and combinations, and that has been our reality, and again it kicks in as our reality. So don't become discouraged by the default mode kicking in. It's just that you continue in the process of taking inspiration and recommitting. This is it's part of the anarta nivritti. You know this. The of those different types of anishchita bhakti characteristics, one is the vows that one makes to improve in bhakti are intermittent. And similarly, very similarly, the vows to do without something that we know is debilitating. The anishtita stage is faith is not nishta, it's anishtita, it's intermittent. And that's the mind. Sankalpa vikalpa. Mind. But driving that is, beneath that, is the soul's desire to connect with Krishna. It's what keeps you going. And as you keep going, in course of time, just that this cultivator plants the seed in time, the fruits of anishtita, nishta,
will come. Promise you.
It works that way. I can promise because it works that way. Just stay always in a sincere mood as much as you can, and try to increase that sincerity and stay always in the association of devotees. It's like, continue to stand near a fire, you'll get warm. Similarly, continue to stay in the association of devotees. Be very careful to guard against offenses, because that will drive away the soul from the association of devotees. Stay always in the association of devotees. And that will kindle that desire to be with Krishna. Always. Not intermittently. It works. And then, even for me? Yes. You sure? Yes. That's, you know, every one of us. Struggles are there for every one of us. Stay always in the association of devotees. And strive with sincere desire. I'm far from that objective, but I want to come to that goal. I want that
uninterrupted, steady, faithful submission and surrender to Krishna. Like I feel when I'm in Elevated Devotees Association for some time. I want to be there all the time. I'm far from there. I want to be there. So with that sincere desire, stay in the Association of Devotees. It will come. Second question. Yeah.
In the Bhagavad Gita 4.4 reading, it talks about unmanifested Pradhan. So are these two the same?
No. No. The unmanifested Pradhan is, well, yes and no. It's a stage before the glance, and then after the glance, because before the glance, there's no differentiation. There's no 24 elements. It's just one thing. But with the glance, then it's differentiated, and one of those differentiated things is the 24th element. So, no. But yes, because Pradhan includes...
You're saying one of the elements of translations of Chaitanya is contaminated consciousness. And we also heard that consciousness is concomitant with the soul.
Yeah, so there's... It's the reflection of... So it's like air that's odorless and colorless, and air that stinks. Or smells good. Anything else? Serve him. Right. Yeah, am I missing something? Is there something behind your question that I'm not understanding? Prabhupada, I'll just repeat. Prabhupada said Krishna consciousness is very simple. God is very great. He's the controller and proprietor and the enjoyer. He's very great. We're very tiny. And therefore we should serve him. That is Krishna consciousness. We can describe how Krishna is great. He's the controller. He's the proprietor. He's in so many subsets of how he is the controller, how he is the proprietor, how he is the enjoyer. And now how do we act on that understanding? Serve him. How can we serve him if he's already the controller? Well, just, it's the love that you give. He's the controller. He permits you to offer a flower. Offer with his permission. He's controlling, but you offer with love. You do the things that you do as an offering to Krishna with love. You digest your food, which you don't have even, you don't have any control over. Krishna does. But take Krishna prasadam, and that nourish. Anyway, so even things we're not conscious of, just you, not because Krishna is the controller of those things happening. He's the controller of things that we're aware of and not aware of. Recognizing that, take inspiration from the greatness of Krishna and serve him lovingly, in practical ways, with your senses, and bring that to material objects and serve him lovingly. Bhaj. Bhakti. Anything? Yeah?
It's more difficult. The lotus stand and then the lotus on the stomach manifest.
Yeah?
But with the tradition, is that spiritual?
Yes. For a lot. Oh. Do you have, you were going to ask a question? You want to do that before? Hare Krishna. Have a nice program. We'll be there shortly. We'll be with you. There you go. Say Hare Bol to Prahlad for me, okay?
And all those are still within
the spiritual realm? No, material. At what point does the separation come? Because Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is completely spiritual. Your question was it in the material or the spiritual realm? It's in the material realm. Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is in the universe. That's the material realm. His abode is fully spiritual. But that spiritual abode is within the material realm. You see that as a contradiction? Does Krishna have a spiritual body or a material body? And does he appear in the material realm? In a spiritual body? Yes. Why not? And Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, spiritual or material? And does he appear in the material realm? Yes. What else? Okay.
But is that why Brahma cannot go down further into the stem?
He goes down further into the stem, but he can't find Garbhadakshaya Vishnu by Pratyaksha. He sees Garbhadakshaya Vishnu after he does his tapa, but not by Pratyaksha. He has purification as the prior qualification. Then he can see. Then he has qualification to see. He has the qualification to see, and then Vishnu appears in the darkness of the universe with the fullness of his spiritual abode right before Brahma's eyes. But it's not pratyaksha. It's divine revelation. Because he's qualified. Because he heard and he understood what to do, and he did it. He purified himself. Then Lord Vishnu was pleased by that divine service of tapa. He manifested himself and did a whole bunch of things. Instructed him and, you know, trained him up to do his service.
Brahma is the first created being.
Yes.
Then how he became material by the touch of material?
If Brahma is the first created living being, how did he become impure? I don't see any contradiction. The first created beings means there's some taint. There's not become impure. He's given a service to do, but he's also given a body because of material contact. Anything else? Yes. The ladies have their hands up too, so we'll just... after your question, men can hold off for a second and get the ladies' question.
My understanding is that the anartha nivritti process is ecstatic if I am able to see
Krishna,
the instrument of the purification,
yeah,
as an agent of Krishna.
Yeah.
But more often, almost 100% of the time, the moment just passes and the instrument of purification becomes the object of, you know, my anger. Do you see that in that moment?
Krishna consciousness. Surrender to Krishna. If you're desiring relationship with Krishna, then you'll see. And if you're desiring
enjoyment apart from Krishna, you won't see. Desire relationship with Krishna, then you'll see Krishna. Or preliminary to that, you can see through knowledge at least. But as we all know, knowledge is insufficient to stay in that position. So it's it's intermittent. But in the platform of genuine devotion, it's steady. Nanda Vrindavan, you had... Oh.
Any questions back there? Okay.
What exactly is purification?
Say it in a negative or positive. Positive is returning to our natural state. The negative is removing the coverings. No. There's feelings. But it's not just a feeling. There's coverings. And as coverings are removed, which is purification, there's a feeling. This is nice. Like, you know, when you take a bath in the morning, there's a feeling. I feel refreshed. But there's, you know, things that are being removed by that bathing process. So purification is a bathing the soul process. And removing the contaminations of the coverings of the soul. Intelligence, mind, desire. You know, subtle things. But also, you know, equipping the senses to then be in a purified state. To serve Krishna properly and experience Krishna through those purified senses. Therefore, we don't just chant, we also serve in practical ways. And through that practical service, like, you know, the practical service of worshipping the deity, the practical service of cooking for the deity, the practical service of cleaning, whatever are the services that we do, the practical service of making the flyer for the dance program, it's practical service. It's purifying the senses. Purifying the senses. Removing... The contamination, according to Bhagavad Gita, the contamination of the senses, one of them is their sitting places of lust. So instead of lust, it's service and love. Purification of the senses. And then I can experience the Krishna connection when I'm sitting in my computer making a flyer. Using what I learned in to do for Krishna instead of getting a pat on the head or a paycheck, but just pleasing Krishna, just for pleasing Krishna. It's a different experience. The experience is purification. It's a nice experience, but there's something happening, not just a subjective experience.
Follow up on purification.
Okay, fine.
Can we say, when you say of getting purified from one getting to a purified stage, can we say that we can attain those 26 divine qualities?
Sure.
So which means that we are purified? I mean,
those are symptoms of purification.
But that's not purification. That's 26 qualities. I have all 26 qualities.
It's the state of being purified. It's not the process. the qualities are the fruit. And then there's a process that leads to the fruit. Purification is the process that leads to the fruit. And the fruit is being purified. I guess you could say it's that is purification. That's the fruit of the process of purification. Anything?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. You want to follow up on that one? All right.
When you say about the qualities, really, are the qualities acquired by the soul or on the mental platform?
What do you think? Real qualities are of the soul. Ones that are... Now, what's of the soul will certainly manifest itself on the subtle and the gross physical plane. Conversely, the bad attitude, contamination of the soul, will manifest itself on the subtle and gross physical plane. I'll go back to the other one. Real qualities will manifest on this material, subtle and gross material plane.
So you mean to say that...
Real qualities, that's what I mean to say is, real qualities are of the soul. And it doesn't go away. It's always, even in adversity, even in difficult, doesn't matter. Plus, it doesn't matter what feature of duality shows its face. It's always there. Equanimity is one of the qualities. Okay. See the Prabhupada ki jai.
Jai.